Welcome to Tech Leaders Today with your host, Kathy Crossley. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Now here's Kathy Crossley.
Welcome to Tech Leaders Today. I'm here with best-selling author Anthony R. Howard, industry-recognized consultant and technology expert for the premier global technology firms for over 12 years. Presently, he is a leading technology specialist for one of the world's largest information technology firms, where he was named number one IT superhero by InfoWorld and Computerworld, doing work for the U.S. defense sector. He's also the best-selling author of The Invisible Enemy, Black Box, and The Invisible Enemy 2, Vendetta. Welcome, Anthony.
Hey, thank you. Excited to be here, Kathy.
Thank you so much for being here. I was very interested in both what you've been writing about, but also with your background in IT, because I love that people have just a broad perspective of what's going on and not just focus on one area. And I think that really comes to a point that you're a chief systems architect. So you're working with people all around in various different areas. What sectors, what areas are you working with?
So currently I'm with higher education. And that's exciting because we do a whole bunch of huge research projects. Also, state and local government. And then very recently, the Department of Defense and federal government. But even before that, I still work with, you know, huge commercial accounts such as Google, Expedia, Black & Decker, a whole bunch of them. So really, every large realm meaning in terms of projects and number of employees in an organization, I have worked with.
So you've worked with so many different people, I'm sure, because one of the things I love, if you're in a consulting environment, and I come from that background, is the variety of different levels in the technology organizations and sometimes the business organizations, but you're also working with government or public institutions. So the people that you're working with, they must be struggling with all of the changes and advances in technology. And we've recently had large media coverage on many different things, such as what's going on with Yahoo and the security. Are you running into any kind of concerns that you see in the IT space?
Oh, absolutely. Security is actually under discussed. So that's actually the biggest gap I see in terms of the larger organizations, because they're huge targets. And it's not always money that hackers and intruders are after. They're after identities and data. So intellectual property and millions of accounts and contact information and millions of identities that they can either sell, barter with, or use for unscrupulous means. We saw what happened with Yahoo, but it's happened so many times before, and a lot of them don't make the news, right? You know, obviously companies aren't going to call and say, hey, I've been hacked. They're going to keep it as quiet as possible. But it happens a lot more than, you know, the regular mainstream folks know about. And it's people like me that are called in to try and fix the mess and prevent it from happening again.
A CIO at a university, for example, has a lot of information on students and alumni. Should that person be hiring firms to help with the security? Do they bring people in? How do they know that they're bringing in? Where do you find the people? Because it's not just about technology.
If I were the CIO of a major institution, I would actually be doing both. The first step is to hire a chief security officer, someone who has experience with large institutions in protecting the intellectual property and the identity and the data of those large institutions. The second thing, that officer, whoever they hire, whether they call it security officer or not, the second thing is an assessment, right? An assessment needs to be done by either a company or a firm that has a lot of experience with doing assessment, security assessment specifically. This should not be done by an internal team, whether they want to have free assessments done by folks who are competing for a bid or however they want to put together. I recommend, you know, spending a few bucks and paying for a professional assessment by a firm that has experience in guarding high-level data, you know, whether it be for the Department of Defense or whomever, to do a full-on security assessment. And I've been a part of a lot of these, and they're extremely useful. They will dig up vulnerabilities that you never even thought about, even within the organization. So not just protecting from external hacks, you know, China or disgruntled students. But what about those within, right? Disgruntled employees. What about students who are registered to the university, but they want to test out some open source virus, right? How do you defend against that? All those things that no one really thinks about are huge, huge threats.
I had not thought about the concept of even students going in and potentially creating security risks, but having been a computer science student in the past, the access to the system, even the system administrators at that time, were other students. So there is a lot of risk involved when you're at a higher ed institution.
When I was in school, and this was back before there were cybercrime laws, like the internet was kind of emerging, right? I'm telling my age here a little bit, but the internet was kind of emerging. There weren't necessarily privacy laws, there weren't necessarily piracy laws, and there weren't necessarily cybercrime laws. So it was kind of a free-for-all. It was the younger, experimental folks that did most of the stuff in terms of fun, and we weren't criminals, right? We were trying to test our skills. And, you know, we weren't doing any harm, so we thought, but there was a lot of activity going on, from erasing parking tickets to, you know, just harmless stuff. That generation now, you know, back then there was no social media. Now you have a huge, right, information superhighways where information can be disseminated by FTPs, by torrents and Bitcoin, all the stuff that wasn't even around back then. That kind of culture has proliferated, even though there are cybercrime laws now. But, you know, in the mind of the subculture of IT, right, there's a lot of talent. So not only is there a huge level of talent that they're managing, you know, the higher level university and the IT students, but there is a huge level of risk in managing this talent, because you now have to protect your own university from this level of talent and their free spirit, whether they want to test some new technology or penetrate the boundaries of their own knowledge with that university's firewalls, because they're already within and have access to the data and the equipment.
Let's take this to the technology side now and step away from security. Tell me about any technology areas or initiatives that are really interesting to you at the moment.
So one really touches me, and I really like the projects I do that save lives. A lot of stuff I do saves money, some save jobs. I like the project to save people and save lives. And one of them is the virtual reality. You might say, well, how the heck does virtual reality save lives? Well, the virtual reality is a lot more than putting a phone over your eyes and watching a movie. So virtual reality, when used with the right technology, can be used as simulation. So let me give you a specific example from the project I'm working on. Our troops had a problem. When they would go in areas, a lot of them would be killed by insurgents or snipers, and that kept happening. Now they have a way, without even getting on the plane, going over there to enemy areas, they can practice sweeping out a base or a city or a suspected Al-Qaeda village without leaving the American base. And the way they do that, imagine a video game with virtual reality where your body is the joystick. So you have live troops with their gear and their equipment on. They have microphones attached to their outfit. They can talk to each other just like in the real life. And now they have virtual reality over their eyes, have their assigned zone to walk around in. And in this virtual reality, right, they can look up just like you and I can look up and see the sky, and we can look down to the concrete in their virtual reality. Through this virtual reality, there's artificial intelligence that are enemy snipers, enemy tanks, IEDs, or impromptu explosive devices for those in the non-military, and all these other threats that they'll have to practice neutralizing before they even get on the plane to go to the enemy area. By the time they get on the plane, they have swept out the base or whatever area hundreds of times, and they know where the snipers are hiding, and they know every corner and every nook of that village or of that base or of that area or of that building. Now the casualties are almost zero because they had so much practice in doing this using the virtual reality. It's extremely lifelike. The voices are real. They can talk to their friends just like in Xbox Live. And it really resonates with the younger generation who grew up off of Xbox and video games and stuff like that. So obviously, as we know, you get one life in the real zone. But here, we want them to mess up in the simulation and in the virtual reality. So when they go over and do it for real, we have no casualty. It's been a huge impact and one of my favorite projects.
That's just like what we've seen in movies and TVs for years, and now you're saying it's a real thing.
It's a real thing. It was really good to see it was actually working, that they liked it, and it was a whole lot of work to get done, because it's not just a gaming engine, right? You have to remember, you have to be able to transport this solution behind enemy lines. So you need something light, you need something with the right power requirements, you need something that's easy to use, turn and turn off, you need something that's easy to transport and hook up and hook in, and something that the coders can easily use and turn on, turn off, and execute on if they need to do something with the tool behind without ideal data center and training conditions.
With the virtual reality concepts and then applying those to real life, are there any other applied uses that you could see in the future?
Actually, yes. This is a little bit further, and this is something, it's in the idea phase now. But, you know, I'm also passionate not just about saving lives, but about education and literacy. And as you know, you can't put every child in the world on a plane to a different country or the Great Wall of China or the Vatican to see this type of thing. That would be really, really expensive. I don't see that happening anytime soon. But if you use virtual reality, kids who have never set foot out of their home city or home state to travel and see the wonders of the world in such clarity and such virtual reality so they can appreciate and see things they never would have been able to see. They can see a world far beyond their neighborhood or that state. Especially when you have neighborhoods that are poorly funded, you can give children the opportunity to just see how wonderful the world is beyond, right? I know you traveled all over the world. You know, you've seen things in Asia and things in Italy and things, you know, all over Europe. Now we can give children the ability to see that, to see what you saw and to see what I saw. When we saw it, right, it changed our lives, right? Traveling is great, especially traveling outside the United States. There's a whole world out there. You know, most Americans don't even have passports, and most children don't have a passport unless your parents have one. And traveling by themselves is probably not an option for most. But if they can see what we saw and open their eyes, it can be changed forever. It could change their whole outlook. So that's another use I see for VR. Right now it's in the conceptual phase, but I'm working to get it beyond that. That's pretty huge.
There have been some new shows in coordination between Discovery Channel and USA Today with those travel for visualization in mind. I would love to spend a week in the Vatican Museum, for example, and I've spent 2 full days there, and it still wasn't enough time. So I can really appreciate how kids could truly learn history. They could learn culture. It would be pretty different, even understanding the language. Like when I travel around, the first time you're there, you don't get a chance to see everything. You're still learning. What do these signs mean? Where do I go? Just the ability to, even before a trip, if they're going to take one, to understand what they're going to see so there's not as much of a shock would be pretty impressive.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
You have experienced a lot of interesting things over time, and I know that you also have some personal projects that you've done. So can you tell us about the personal projects that you've been working on over the years?
Sure. So I have books I've written, and I've had high-performance compute stuff that I've done as well. With the high-performance compute, working with Georgia State and their Department of Physics and Astronomy, right, we are actually hunting for Earth 2.0, which is pretty cool. So most people imagine that one telescope and you look out at the sky and see what you see. Using high-performance compute and technology I've architected, you can actually put up a set of telescopes all around Georgia and all around the university, use those telescopes at the same time, hooked into a high-performance compute environment and look at solar imaging and planet and see that the surface of that planet and see if this planet has oxygen and using all these complex computations using computers. That's one of the ones that excite me. And then the other, of course, is my passion about literacy. 2 books that are out now, well, one actually hit the bestsellers list. The Invisible Enemy, Black Fox, is written about a lot of the projects that I worked on with the Department of Defense. So I take the reader behind the scenes for those who are interested in what's really going on in espionage and Department of Defense. So we talked about amount of soldiers, that's pretty interesting, but this actually goes a bit deeper into the intelligence and the spy realm and technology that you've never heard of before and government agency that you've never heard of before, such as the NRO, which is the National Reconnaissance Agency, which runs the satellites that are up there. And this book, though it's fiction, they call it factual fiction because it's based on what's really happening. It predicted a lot of things that have come to pass very recently, including the spies that were caught by the FBI. And this book goes into how they were trained, recruited, et cetera, et cetera. The book starts out with an American reporter who discovers a secret that will bring America to its knees. And it's a real secret. I didn't make it up. It's how South Korea came out with weapons of mass destruction that nobody knew about. The spies that have been planted here since birth, try and stop that spy from putting it out. Someone is discovered, and the CIA creates a team of assassins to go after the spies. And that's not even chapter one. So it's a really exciting book. A lot of truth is in it. Really excited that it hit the bestsellers list. And another one of my passion is hearing from readers who have read the book and are excited about technology like I've been, pushing the boundaries of where technology can go.
And you've released the second book?
The second book is now out. It's called The Invisible Enemy 2, Vendetta. And that is a sequel to the first one. And it goes even deeper into artificial intelligence, carries on so you see where the spies are and where the assassins are and how decisions America has made decades ago come back to haunt us. So it's carry on, it's even more exciting, with even more action.
Very nice. I like books that, when they're written, and especially when they have discussions on technology, that they're accurate. It's wonderful to see a technology person writing actual fiction because it's not just made up.
And you're right. It's one of the reasons why I try to stay away from the Hollywood type technology because it's all fictional. Instead of introducing fictional organizations, right, I introduce real agencies that do exist, but no one has ever heard of since the organizations were extremely classified for so long. And then Hollywood generally won't show these entities for a variety of reasons, right? One of them being it would take too long to explain the organization, its functions, its politics, and why it exists. So I found a way to show the reader these dynamics through the action in the book and through the dialogue. This excites a lot of readers and makes the book really, really different. And then in Hollywood, easier to take an agency people already know or make up your own rules and your own agency. I don't do that either. I use real agencies that you've heard of, along with agencies that you haven't heard of. Hollywood's always going to use and conform to stereotypical roles to make things familiar to the mind. I mean, this term is sometimes called bounded rationality, which is a behavioral theory term, which basically means the human brain will only process what it understands. And this, of course, is not how real life works, right? In real life, because a person or country doesn't know about a technology or doesn't have a technology, that doesn't make that technology not real. So, you know, I break all of Hollywood's rules, and I love it, which creates a deeper plot line. It's very different. It's mysterious. It's non-stereotypical characters. It's really intriguing theme.
Nice. It brings it all together. Well, how do people find you online, on social media, and other avenues? What's the best way to reach out to you?
Best way is always my website, which is AnthonyRHoward.com. Please don't forget the R. It's AnthonyRHoward.com. And then second is my email, which is theinvisibleenemy@gmail.com. Those are the two favorite ways. I am also on Facebook at facebook.com/theinvisibleenemy. So all those are ways to find, but the website is always, you can always find out what's going on, what events, what new technology, what projects are on my website, AnthonyRHoward.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining me today, Anthony.
Thank you, Cass. You had a great, great time. Thank you.
I want to thank you so much for listening today. If you love this podcast, please do share it with your friends and colleagues, and please leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher because it makes a difference for circulation. For the show notes and other great info, enter your email into the mailing list at techleaderstoday.com. Thank you.